Hello and welcome to the Armenian News Network, Grung. In this Conversations on Grung episode, we're going to discuss with our guests a call to the Armenian government to form a fact-finding commission to fully analyze the profound defeat in the fall of 2020. This episode was recorded on Friday, July 30th, 2021.
The disastrous outcome of the 2020 war in Artsakh has left Armenians in Armenia and around the world with many unanswered questions. Many long-time held beliefs about the capability of Armenia to defend Artsakh and Armenia itself were shattered on November 9 with the signing of the Trilateral Ceasefire Statement. A group of more than 10 academics and researchers recently published a lengthy set of questions that are proposed as a basis for a fact-finding commission to investigate the causes and the results of the war. The document can be found on the web at armeniacommission.org, and today we'll be talking with three of the co-authors of this document.
Dr. Simon Sarajian, who is the founding director of the Russia Matters Project at Harvard Kennedy School's Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs, and he also helps advance the center's U.S.-Russia initiative to prevent nuclear terrorism. His research interests include national power, military interventions, arms control, counterterrorism, and the foreign, defense, and security policies of Russia and other post-Soviet states in their relations with the great powers. Prior to joining Harvard, Dr. Sarajian worked as a researcher, consultant, and journalist in Russia for 15 years, including as an editor of the Moscow Times. Arthur Mardirosyan, who is a senior consultant at CM Partners. In 1994, Mardirosyan joined the Conflict Management Group, CMG, and worked with Professor Roger Fisher on several projects in the former Soviet Union. From 2001 through 2008, he was the director of the Momentum Program, Leadership and Negotiation Culture Change in the former Soviet Union. And Tevan Bogosyan, who is president of the International Center for Human Development in Yerevan. Mr. Bogosyan was an MP in the National Assembly between 2012 and 2017 from the Heritage Party. From 1997 to 1999, he served as the Nagorno-Karabakh Public Affairs Office Director in Washington, D.C. Thank you, everyone, for joining to discuss this important matter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone. So perhaps we could begin with Simon. As the lead author of the document, could you give us a brief overview of this document? And, you know, when was it conceived and what were your motivations for the initiative? And what was the process like in coming up with the team and the document itself?
I'd like to start with saying I participated in this project and I intend to continue to do so strictly in personal capacity. So I'm not representing Harvard in that particular project or mm-hmm. any other organization for that sense. It's something I do in my own time and I intend to continue to do so. So in terms of conceiving the project, like everyone else in the diaspora, I was trying to understand what it is that I could do given my expertise, area of expertise, as the war progressed last year and then ended it in how it ended. And one of the ideas that occurred to me was that it's better to consult other people on what could be done and exchange ideas. And that's how it started. I basically reached out to Armenian experts that I knew. And in November, all of us who are participating in this interview and several other individuals started to hold regular Zoom sessions to discuss what is it that we could do. Mm-hmm. And as we did so, we exchanged a list of ideas. And one of the ideas on my list was to come up with questions that need to be answered so that this defeat is not repeated in future. And I thought, given my personal experience, establishing a commission that would look at such questions would be a good idea. And most, if not all, of those participating in the discussions agreed it was a good idea. And in terms of why I thought it would be a good idea was, as I said, was my personal experience. I was in the United States when the 9/11 attacks occurred, and I then saw how the American society reacted to it and how a commission was established to look at the causes of this failure, which was a failure. And then further on, when I came back from studies in the United States back to Russia, the horrible hostage-taking attack in the city of Beslan occurred. And I was at the first Valdai Club session, where mostly foreign experts met with senior Russian government officials, and then a selected group met with Vladimir Putin. And we were discussing this attack as it unfolded at one of the sessions, and I stood up and said, when this is over, shouldn't there be an investigation to try to find out what went wrong and why this became such a tragic reality? So that commission was established in Russia. I'm not saying I was the one who inspired it. I just called for it, amongst probably others. And it didn't do really well, I should say, in terms of finding the fact-based answers. The 9/11 commission fared better, and then perhaps Artur will tell us about the commissions he has looked at. But this is how the whole thing, evolved. So motivation, the urge, the feeling of the urge to do something, and then thinking what it is that we could do. And then the goal was to at least to come up with the questions that could be instrumental in finding out what confluence of what factors, so structure and agency, not just people, making some decisions that affected,
right,
but also the longer term structural factors, led to what we saw, unfortunately, last fall, and what we think should not be repeated. And the way not to repeat it is to find answers to the questions, what went wrong. Thank you.
Arthur, you're a conflict management expert. You've worked in the former Soviet Union for decades on various conflicts. How did you want the fact-finding and analysis to proceed for optimal results? What was your role in organizing this document and this initiative?
Well, I wear several hats. I mean, as at Yale, I studied democracy, transition, nationalism, and I've been involved in major negotiation processes. And I know that a crisis, some of the negotiations were around crisis or post-crisis. I know that crisis leaves very deep wounds, especially on interpreting what happened. That part is the most difficult conversation. What happened? Why it happened the way it happened? So from the process standpoint, if the nation, and if we are defining the nation as not just citizens of Armenia, but broader, includes diaspora and obviously Artsakh, if we as a nation, as a political nation, we cannot find sufficient consensus on what and how it happened, it's going to be a very much dividing issue going forward. And my perspective, kind of leadership perspective on this, is that we cannot afford that, because the house divided falls. We as a nation have one major competitive edge, and that is the human capital. And if that human capital cannot be mobilized because of cleavages and divisive issues, then we're not going to be able to compete in that part of the world, in that geography, in that geopolitics. That's a very obvious, I think, line of reasoning why a commission would be necessary. And when you were presenting, you said a call to the government. I don't think we made a call to the government. This is a call to researchers, to people, Armenians who are interested and know how to do applied research that meets standards of such research, that they could do their own search for answers.
Yeah,
I have
yeah.
my own reservations when it comes to the government and what the government can do about it, but that's a totally different issue. And if you'd have questions, I can go more into that.
We can definitely talk about that. We actually have a lot of questions about this, but I also wanted to give the opportunity to Tevan to give a brief overview of his perspective and how he got involved in this project, and what are his priorities that he sees here.
I think it has been one of the most important time for whole Armenian nation in the world after November 10, 2020, when everyone tried to understand why it's happened, what it's happened, and so on. And I do believe that a lot of Armenians all over the world try to find how they can be helpful to the their homeland. In the general discussions, I think idea of preparing the questionnaires and have the very important kind of a task to fulfill, help to do something as a real draft for in purpose to present to the public necessity of this idea was developed and proposed by Simon and the all other team who has been joining in these discussions. And I think during the time, Simon, Arthur, and many others done a really great job, tried to at least systematize using various international experiences and helping in the and helping commission, which I hope in the future would be possible to organize, not with this ruling government, but in any way in the future, try to find out the most important answers to very important questions with the really digging deep and coming to the roots of the problems that lead in a very long time to the situation which resulted in November 9, not agreement, but the statement, or let's call it even second ceasefire agreement, and Armenian defeat in the Karabakh war.
You sort of actually shortcutted to my the next question that we were planning on asking. And to begin with, the idea of a commission is indeed a compelling one. And while the document itself, you know, when we were reading it, there are a lot of detailed questions in there, but the document itself doesn't seem to be very prescriptive about the exact structure or a mandate the commission should have. And you said that there is a hope for not this government, but next one. But let me just also, you know, go there and say, you know, what we have in Armenia today, the Civil Contract Party won a very comfortable majority in the recent parliamentary elections, short of a super majority. The two opposition parties in parliament, the Armenia Alliance, which includes the ARF and Reviving Armenia Party, and I Have Honor Alliance, comprised of the Republican and Hayrenik parties, are going to be the main opposition in parliament. And last week, Alen Simonyan, a senior member of the Civil Contract Party, who is slated to become the Speaker of the Parliament, announced that their party has decided to set up a commission to investigate the 44-day war once the new session of Parliament starts. Specifically, Simonyan stated that the Civil Contract intends to be the initiator of this commission and will include all extra-parliamentary forces. The two parliamentary opposition parties had actually been the ones who campaigned on the idea of setting up such a commission, and now they are already expressing misgivings about the commission, arguing that such a commission should not be led by the party that was in political leadership during the war. So, Tevan, what do you have against Civil Contract leading this commission?
First of all, let me express deep appreciation for a very good question and in a detailed presentation. And let me divide to few parts that question to give a clear answer. One of the first points, if in the parliament we have an investigative commission, then only in the case, according to rule of procedures, of defense and security issues, you are not forming commission by members of the parliament, but it's becoming automatically defense and security committee. Only defense and security committee. Like if you're doing any other issues, investigative commission, then in the keeping up the proportion of the parties there, but any member or professional who would be willing to come, like maybe you are in a different commission, but your faction can appoint you to that commission. But in the case of defense and security, we have a clear written law on rules of procedures, and it would be a defense and security commission. Now, If it's done in the parliament only, then it's Defense and Security Commission. And what we have in the previous 3 years, the similar commission, which should investigate 2016 aggression of from Azerbaijan towards Artsakh Republic. Have you able to be read any report of that commission? But according to rules of procedures, that commission should be organized only for 6 months, and then they have a permission to continue for another 6 months. We have about 1.5 years already passed, and there is no any report publicized, which meaning that it's very much politicized issue with the non-professional many times members, and with the clear-cut majority of this of ruling party. That's why I don't believe that they would be really success story. If a second option to organize a separate independent commission, but everything depends who are there and what mandate they have. Right. If they have a mandate to use the secret information, it's totally different. If you're inviting guys from outside of members of the parliament, then they need to also understand how their mandate would work and what is the role would be there. That's why I think what is the real political aim of Alan Simonyan or ruling party pronunciation, trying to use the old Soviet proverb saying that if you wish to kill any problem and never resolve, establish commission. That's why I don't believe in their sincerity, and I don't believe in their honesty, and I don't believe that it would be helpful. But what is really good with all these discussions and all these ideas, and in reality, why we think that our document should be really a live one, open one, from many, many times adding their questions, many, many times adding their answers, is to at least build up archives for future, that many issues will not be simply shadowed or destroyed real facts on that. And I hope that in the future, maybe with not this ruling party, but there be a real opportunity to establish commission, which would have do the job, because of not only security issues but also on issues of foreign policy, on issues of social life, and the most important, on issues of psychological logic of why the nation haven't been prepared for patriotic war.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that we now need to appreciate many, many personal even investigations from different journalists, for investigative journalists, for many scientists who are trying to answer the questions, who are trying to keep up the information, who are trying to archive some knowledge for the future. But in reality, Alan Simonyan's position is simply political, and there are strong manipulation. Would they keep up according to rule of procedures, or would they go with the totally different independent commission? But again, everything right. would be depend on what kind of a mandate these people would have from the right side and the obligation side.
Yeah, it has the potential of becoming completely political. Arthur, given your experience, can you cite any good international examples of similar fact-finding commissions that you think Armenia could or should emulate?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be speaking in a normative language of what Armenia should be doing, but there are all sorts of examples of independent commissions that have succeeded in addressing the most important question. That is, learning lessons from what happened, and the purpose is to avoid repeating the lessons as the same mistakes as Simon and Tevan put it. So if you are not learning from the mistakes, so the chances are you're going to be doomed to repeat them.
Yes,
everybody who's been in a crisis knows that one of the important components of overcoming the crisis is communicating exactly what happened. Well, I gave several examples. Well, as we are speaking, we have the Select Committee, House Select Committee in the United States, looking into January 6th, 2021 attack on...
And they tried to model that after the 9/11 Commission, right?
They tried, but it's not a commission. I stress that. It's a select committee because, unfortunately, Republicans rejected, and they in the Senate, they filibustered the conversations about establishing such a commission. If they followed what was proposed originally as a commission, it would be five Republicans, five Democrats, a Democrat chairing, and the vice chair would be a Republican. And that would be the model of, previous commissions, independent commissions. Independent because they represent both aisles, sort of.
Right.
Unfortunately, Republicans rejected it, and Democrats took it to the House, where they have the majority, and they pushed through the Select Committee. And the Select Committee has one important flaw right now, which is, Speaker Nancy Pelosi can appoint eight Democrats and one Republican, and Republicans can have, I think, five slots, and only two have been taken by them right now, Cheney and Kinsinger. So Republicans are doing this because they want to later at least be able to claim that it was not a neutral, independent investigation. I don't want to go into this because this is not a model for Armenia. In fact, Armenia might repeat the same pattern where, you know, one party looks into it and then others are not satisfied with the outcome, and they always can claim that it was politically manipulated, biased, and it's not objective investigation into what happened. If we're talking about more successful approaches, I think the most successful one that I know of is the Norwegian Commission, the so-called Girl Commission or Girl Report, which is investigating the Breivik attack, the terrorist attack on in downtown Oslo and then in on the island of Utøya. I'm not going to go into the details of what happened there. I think your audience probably well remembers what happened. But the commission itself is noteworthy because the commission was not headed by anybody from the government. It was truly independent. And Gov is the name of Alexander Gov. She was lawyer. She was out of working for Statoil, which is a state corporation.
Right.
So
right.
She was totally independent. And then they engaged police officers and experts on terrorism from Denmark and Finland because they assumed that Norwegian police would be biased investigating its own actions and deficiencies. So they engaged the Finns and the Danes. And they also engaged independent researchers, people who were qualified to analyze and understand the lessons. The report, it's about 500-page report with recommendations of what needs to be changed. And the recommendations were taken seriously, and police was reformed because, for instance, the only helicopter that they had on that day was anchored. It could not fly because the crew was on vacation. And police was not able to bring the crew immediately into to use a helicopter, and without it, certainly the. I'm just giving you one example. There are so many different things that they looked into. They turned every stone to understand what needs to be done, and some of the things continued right now because they believe that the problem with this terrorist act was not just this lone wolf terrorists who committed it, but there were issues with the attitudes in the society and some of the values and some of the things that had been formed for years before that attack came. It's a broader societal response now to what happened and what needs to be done to prevent it from occurring again. So I wouldn't say Armenia needs to follow exactly what Norwegians did. I'm just saying that when people want to learn from lessons, we can see that they are genuinely into learning from the crisis.
Right.
But when there is kind of a doubt, even from what I heard Tevan say, and I've heard many other people express their concerns, how objective can be an investigation when you are investigating yourself. At least Mr. Pashinyan, the Prime Minister, acknowledged that he was responsible for some of the things. So how can you be in good faith really investigating yourself? This can end up in the worst scenarios in such commissions, when you are looking for a scapegoat. And you find a scapegoat, mm-hmm. and then you sweep all the issues under the carpet.
Right.
And instead of learning, instead of consensus building, you end up in what I described, another dividing line where people don't believe. And it affects political legitimacy too. So you might, the cost of doing it might be your political legitimacy. And yes, you mentioned that they've got the majority. I'm not going to go into whether that majority is really enough for one political force to mm-hmm. Form such a commission. Obviously not, in my book, because 53% or 54%, although gives you a majority and even qualified majority in the parliament, it's only 26% of the of your own electorate,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't include diaspora, I mean, so it's all left out. The other piece that was of a concern for me was this appeal to engage the political parties that are not in the parliament. Most of these political parties, we know after the elections, met with Mr. Pashinyan, and they talked about how they're going to form a standing forum for discussions and whatnot. I'm not opposed to that per se, but why it should be only the political parties if you are taking outside of the parliament? Why not cast the net wider? So there are questions about the process and the design of that process, but I think we probably are doing a little bit of disservice to this project because it really tries not to play the blame games, and Simon may take his time to address some of those issues. But we, for instance, specifically said we are not going to publish this.
Mm-hmm.
We are not blaming anyone. We don't want to be pointing our finger at anyone in particular. Therefore, the questions are not related only the last 3 years of the current political regime in Armenia, and they are not even limited to the last 30 years. There are issues related to the value system that can be looked into even beyond in the Soviet time or even beyond that. So it's really an attempt to call for a very broad participation of researchers, of anyone who wants to contribute to this, and we understand the limitations. We can only use data in the open domain. What gives me hope that this is still possible is that several investigative journalists, Hethk and not only, have been looking already into some of these questions and collecting data. So we need to mobilize and, again, bring as many people into this as possible.
And just a quick follow-up on the Norwegian model you cited earlier. Was she vetted with subpoena power so that she could bring anybody who she needed to ask questions? And
yes, of course they were. I mean, that's very important. I mean, because if they are calling a witness, the witness should appear in front of that commission. And then they are even taking the oath. And in Norway, it was not any different. They're taking the oath of telling the truth and only truth. I don't know what the Norwegian criminal code has for lying under oath for perjury, but I'm sure that there are something that would make any official called to the stand. It's not a court, but it's essentially, I mean, your reputation is online too. And what's interesting is that Prime Minister Stoltenberg, who is now Secretary General of NATO, He, when he read the report, he acknowledged that many mistakes were made. And he said the past cannot be corrected, but we can learn from these mistakes. He didn't step down. But because of the ramifications and implications in the report, that it's not just the police that was responsible for what happened, he couldn't win the next elections in Norway.
Simon, let me ask you sort of the same question. You know, what should be, in your opinion, the ideal role of the government in such a commission? Do you share the doubts expressed by Tevan about this commission actually being run in parliament? Does that also preclude similar commissions actually being outside of the parliament? But, you know, it seems like from what Arthur is saying, the government's role, you know, there should be some role in the government to give this commission some mandate. And if so, are there examples, like, besides, so we mentioned the Breivik case, but, you know, how do you envision maybe an alternative commission to the government one, you know, run by civil society, by independent experts? And what are your thoughts in general on this?
So there's a... We are in the process amongst the 10 co-authors of deciding what the next steps should be. I think Tivan, Artur, and I are amongst those that agreed that the next steps should be soliciting more questions and then setting out to give some answers based on sound research methods that reflect our areas of expertise. In terms of what the commission should look like and how it would differ if it's alternative to what is being discussed by the ruling party, I refer you to the intro. And we had to be succinct, but I don't agree that we were vague in describing how the commission should look like. It says, this fact-finding commission would consist of statesmen and women and professional researchers with appropriate investigative powers, including the right to obtain official information, commission research, and summon witnesses. Okay, so the role of the government is to give that commission those powers if the goal, the ultimate goal, is to get as close as possible to fact-based truth of what went wrong and why. And that's the commission that I see.
Simon, since you have published this on the website, do you know that the government circles have been reading and responding to this?
I have no clue. But let me continue with answering the questions, as well as commenting on my co-author's observations. I fully agree with Tivan that amongst other pitfalls that a parliamentary commission with one party being in control could fall is the narrow focus. Okay, so think about it is as if you had a hammer, then every problem would seem like a nail to you. Okay, so if it's only defense and security aspects, then you are bound to fail to look at other potential causes that lie outside that domain. Okay, and then the other thing I fully agree with, and this is why we have both structure and agency in formulating the questions represented, is the instinct, the sound instinct to avoid any kind of blame games. I mean, again, give you an example. A French telephonist was in charge of relaying messages from the front where the French were fighting the Germans to Paris. But that had to be interrupted for an hour because she had to have lunch. Are we going to blame the telephonist, or are we going to look at the totality of factors that could have led to the defeat that we saw last year? Thank you.
To continue this, I would like to maybe ask each of you what specific focal areas you think should be part of the questions. I mean, there are a lot of questions, but what would you focus on specifically?
Well, I'd be happy to say what kind of questions I'd like to focus on because they fall within my area of expertise.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And that's the questions on the structural side, which is what components of Armenia's national power faltered compared to that of Azerbaijan and what were the consequences? And it's not just depopulation, it's maybe perhaps technological backwardness in a sense, comparative to the adversary. So these things fall within my area of expertise, and I'd like to research it. And I'd like to say that I also, in ideal world, this commission, I've been asked, like, who do you see as statesmen and professional experts sitting on that commission, other than, you know, co-authors? I would say, I mean, it's very difficult for me, being in diaspora, to answer that question in terms of statesmen, but for professionals, the people that come to mind are people like Darren Acemoglu. If he could agree to participate and answer the questions related to economics and why nations succeed and others fail, that would be a tremendous contribution to that commission.
And it doesn't always have to be an Armenian, right? Not necessarily diaspora or from the Republic. It can be an international expert in the matter.
Not at all. It has to be an Armenian. In fact, Michael Kaufman, whom we consulted and identified, is not Armenian. And several other international researchers we consulted who wish to remain anonymous were not Armenian. So it's really finding the people with the best expertise who could be presumed to be impartial and also interested in answering these questions.
Arthur, maybe a similar question to you. What is your area of expertise, and what would be some questions near and dear to your heart?
Well, I've contributed some of the questions to the list already, and I think my area of expertise is negotiation. And I understand that when the parties go to war, it means that there was failure in negotiations. And I would love to understand where we failed, what was the process that led to the failure. I have some answers to those questions already doing my own research. But obviously, we don't know quite a few things. The process was never transparent, fully transparent or open. And we can, when I'm saying process, I'm not saying only the last 3 years before the war. We can look into how the process evolved, where the missed opportunities, why, if we understood that the other side's alternative to negotiations was a war, then why not, probably enough was done to make that alternative less than viable for them, so that they could not opt to move away from the table of negotiation and go for the war option. So something gave them the confidence that they can succeed and that alternative is strong. And then what gave our side the confidence that we had the alternative of not status quo, because for years it was the status quo. And then what gave our side the confidence that our alternative could be responding to the war with a military response that would be devastating for the other side. So there are questions, many questions related to where the process was and where the process is even now, because it continues and there are even more questions. And I must say that this list of questions is in no way exclusive or final. There can be more questions. As you investigate, as you research and answer some questions, you inevitably can come up with new questions about some of the data. We have one significant limitation, as I said. As independent researchers, we cannot have access to the state secrets, and I'm assuming that a lot of data will be qualified as state secrets related to this war. It won't be like the Israeli Agronaut Commission, which was to look into the victorious Yom Kippur War. In 1973, Israelis beat Egyptians. We know what happened in Yom Kippur, but they still were not satisfied because the initial phase of the war caught them by surprise. And their intelligence had serious failures in anticipating the war, in mobilizing, when to mobilize the, and 80% of their standing army was in reserve. So I know, because I've done some work with Israelis and Palestinians. I've looked with Israelis who were involved, even in that commission, on how they did it. And as a result, Golda Meir stepped down as prime minister. We know what happened. Was it politicized? No, because it was fairly balanced, that commission that they had. And I think, again, I mean, we have to separate these two things. What life is going to have the commission that the ruling party in Armenia is going to establish is one thing. The research, and yes, we may come to some points where we cannot answer questions about negotiation or about the process itself. We cannot even interview the mediators, for instance, which would be great, right, to have an input from the mediators themselves. Would they be telling us how they came to develop what was later known as the Lavrov Plan, why they developed a consensus around it? And we don't know. I mean, we don't know many things about the process, as I said. And we may not find out all the answers. But we need to keep the process and the discourse so that even if it takes another generation, we still would need to get to the bottom of it, to understand, again, why it happened the way it happened and where are the problems that we need to address. If not by us, then by the next generation. Because if we don't, as... I don't think I'm exaggerating things. We may not be able to really put through this as a political nation. Some have argued that, look, if you cannot get the answers now, what's the value of having them in 5 years or 20 years down the road? And I still believe that there is that. And the example that Simon was giving about the... from World War II history, I think people even now turn to some of the lessons there because you learn from lessons. You don't draw lessons, you continue to act as if there is no systemic view of politics, international politics. You just keep reinventing some wheels that come sometimes as square, not as a regular wheel.
Yeah.
So that's where we are right now.
Simon, you mentioned the composition and the constitution of such a commission. Do you want to talk a little bit more about how you want this to proceed from here, as far as who should be on it, how it should be vetted, etc., all the, you know, the tactics of setting up such a commission? I'm asking because I'm not sure we ask you the right questions to talk about the things you want to talk about.
Yeah, so I was saying that I do have a list, and, you know, the list of potential statesmen has about 9 people on it. The list of potential experts is many times that.
Of course, I'm interested in hearing this.
So I'm reluctant to name names because we operate by consensus, essentially. And now we're trying to understand which of us want to take these steps, further steps we identified, asking additional questions and then starting to answer. So once we decide on that and we decide on potential candidates, we're going to start approaching them. And then okay. You know, if they agree to be identified and associate, we'll name them. But at this point, other than saying I've done my homework on potential candidates, I'd rather not comment on names.
Okay.
Thank you.
Kevin, I have a question for you. You have been on our podcast before, and in one of them, I forget which one, you talked about the fact that, you know, around 2011, you were certain already that Azerbaijan was not interested in a negotiated solution to the conflict, and that we should have been preparing for war. So from that period, what would you prioritize in terms of, you know, getting answers to questions that you find important?
Thank you for the question. Yeah, you know, I'm pretty much sure that 2011 was at least a major signal for us that Azerbaijan is not going to ever agree on any political solution. And they would be getting ready for the military solution. It was Kazan. Because in Kazan paper, if you're looking, was everything similar to get similar situation without war. But I think decision on Azerbaijani that at least they are not going for, or I don't know, internal belief in Azerbaijan that they one day will become stronger and will resolve everything militarily, then going to the political solution. And negotiation is needed then for only for keeping their rights, so much so that making their rights accepted by the international community still was from 1994. After immediately signing ceasefire, see, in 1994, see, Azerbaijan was in a situation that they accepted that it would be signed by three sides, that the Nagorno-Karabakh would put its signature equal to the Azerbaijan. The only last document similar to that is the document of 1995 about non-use of force for resolution. But if you're looking after that, Azerbaijan never agreed to treat Karabakh anymore equally as a side. 1996 is a Lisbon first attempt when they try to overcome. And if you're going that belief in them has been given by the West, mainly maybe America, by saying that your oil is much stronger element and believe one day you would become wealthy, you would have a generation which will even exercise the power, and you need to go for this. But 2011 for me is the last point when the political decision was taken that it should be only military solution. And they just need to work on the time when it would prepare. Maybe first time they believe in 2016, but I think 2020 was different to that point that Armenian power in Armenia has been eager already for 1 or 2 years engaged with Azerbaijan on direct secret talk besides of Minsk co-chairs format, and Turkey was ready at that time to enter military to the zone of post-Soviet Union countries, which previously has been considered only the zone for Russian influence or entrance. And Turkey is very interesting on that regard, that it's NATO country who first military entered into the post-Soviet country's territory on the open conflict. I think they've been really building a long way by using only one thing, politically decision that never they giving up on their right. And what is really painful now in Armenia is today a ruling party is ready to give up the right, never looking that maybe future generations or next generations would not appreciate for today's solution, and they would much more prefer to say that just keep the right, and one day we would be so strong that we would go for our recovery of our homeland.
Tevan, I have a quick question on that. The 2011 decision that you refer to, do you think that was an implicit or an explicit internal decision by the Aliyev regime? And the second question is, if we assume that 2016 was a dry run for what came in 2020, there was a commission set up after 2016, April 2016. What was the outcome of that commission?
First of all, I think decision in 2011, with which I'm referring, it's much more information for us. Maybe they took a decision in 2010 or maybe 2009 or maybe 2008. Okay. But in 2011, first time when everyone is believing that something would happen in Kazan. When so after about 15 meetings with the Aliyev, Sersaksyan and Russian President Medvedev at that time. Mm-hmm. When Obama is calling and calling and openly talking to Aliyev and Sersaksyan. When French President is sending letters saying that all our international hope is on you, that in Kazan we would hear something positive, which meaning that Minsk co-chairs truly build up to that point. And according to my internal information, Aliyev accepted the letter from French president saying that no problem, it would be signed. Medvedev went there, which meaning that internally there was a decision that at least for Russians to say, and only to Obama in his phone conversation, Aliyev said that, you know, there are two minor small editing that I would propose, but I do believe that Armenian side would accept them. Instead of that, now after the Serge Sargsyan interview, we know that when Kazan started, Aliyev said that we have at least 10 amendments. And in reality, no negotiations was there because even Medvedev fully understand that no one is going to do it. And this was the failure point, or Aliyev sent a challenge to the world that I'm not going to accept on the military solution or on negotiating a decision on anything. That's why for us, 2011 is implicit message, at least for us, that guys think and do something different. Now about 2016, you know, first of all, immediately after April, I think in May or in June, there was a commission, which is proper according to the real all state structures. Ministry of Defense of Armenia has done its investigation. There have been a totally few changes which took place, which lead to the new approach to which military equipment should be purchased, what changes should be done in the defense structures to cover the old mistakes or omissions which has been noticed. Political structures such as economy or approaches to the line of contact has been fully changed. Idea of fully put it, it's under surveillance systems was there. And at least on the international community political decisions, you know, there in May, there was an Vienna agreement, and in June, there was an St. Petersburg agreement on increasing monitoring, on investigative mechanism. And I do believe finally there would be also a kind of a sanctions against who would violate the ceasefire. But Aliyev positions was really changing that situation, just for one thing, that Germany has expressed its willingness in July 2016 that they are going fully fund OSCE as a new budget line to do the to fulfill these agreements, but the only country who has ever voted in the OSCE or put it its veto in the OSCE budget commission was always Azerbaijan, and I think for co-chairs it has been full open challenge and message that even in May and June I agreed on this, I'm not going to fulfill it. But now about the commission, 2016 commission, one of the very funny points is that which day has been openly declared by Nikol Pashinyan that it's time to go for this part. It has been the day when he said it. Judiciary system in Armenia is a problem, and we need to go and put under the siege the old courts. You can remember this situation. In it has been Saturday. On Sunday, he make a call to all public, go and close the doors of all courts, not allow them to do. And when international community pressure was like that, you executive has no right to interfere into the judiciary power system. On Monday, everyone has been expecting that in government, which he make the open call for the all like parliament leadership, judiciary system leadership, courts and constitutional courts, guys to go there and be present, and he would be really having a very important talk. Instead of talking about the corruption, judiciary, division of powers, democracy, and blah, 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 he just turned out, yelled on the old judges, and finally said that, and I think it's time to come to organize an, a scrutiny committee or investigation committee on 2016 events, which meaning that from the very beginning, from his call, it has been very politicized issue, and which is, you know what I remember, that I at that time has been a coordinating project with British Embassy and UNDP on building capacity for Parliament. I remember the discussion, like, because it should be the first ever scrutiny committee come up by according to the new constitution in the Parliament. No one knows what is the real procedures to do. Even according to rule of procedures, we have a law, but there would never been an experience, and no one has been noticing that such scrutiny committee cannot be organized by the factions. Just for defense and security, it should be done only by the defense and security committee. Only after 2 days discussions, they found, and I remember that time when I've been saying that, guys, never do it, because half of the documents is secret. You never would be able to present an open report. Maybe your commission should have totally different name, but not for this, because secrets are still there, and 5 years is not passed. At least to have officially like 5 years oldness for the many issues, or sometimes 10 years oldness for some issues, really go and openly do. Unfortunately, they didn't listen to me at that time, and it's meaning that it has been just simply a political decision. That's why you never would be hearing reports. That I don't believe that reports one day would be publicized. Maybe the documents would leak, or report text would leak, but never been officially publicized or go for this. And just for your information, like for thought, remember one day the head of the commission, Andranik Kocharyan, start to talk about their outcomes. They said that, you know, like wherever we opened, that there are a lot of stereotypes, like they was not enough bullets, they were not enough meals, soldiers fight with the toy, no, not with the guns. It has been something.
Yes.
Yes, like they said that it's all that stuff has been just simply tales, rumors, not truths, false information, and by the way, we need to know that Artak Davtsyan, one of the major causes of many problems for 2016. After 1 year, they are appointing second time Artak Davtsyan chief of staff. This is all about that you should know about this commission and its findings.
Yeah.
Even if they found out that the guy has so many problems and he has been one of the major cause, they appoint him chief of staff. Should I now even think about the quality of this report or the real outcomes or lessons learned? I think you have answered better than me.
I understand.
As we near the end of our discussion, I wanted to ask Simon or Arthur and Tevan yourself, if there's any question that you think we should have asked that we missed, or anything that you'd like to add to our discussion today?
I would add only maybe one thing, if you allow me. I think our approach is not simply only for the Armenian state institution. Our report should serve to the whole Armenian nation. Because I believe that it's not simply should be only the mistakes of 44 days, but it should be mistakes of last 30 years, mistakes of last 100 years, mistakes of why we lost the unity between Artsakh Republic, Republic of Armenia, and diaspora. Where is the real national idea, and what to do after from now on to give or rebuild or just give a birth to national state identity in Armenian nation? Because I think what this is one of the major problems. Maybe we keep up our ethnic identity, but there is no statehoodness identity in essence until we will not give that part for us or for many various groups in Armenia. State or statehoodness never would be much higher than their personal pocket, stomach, or life.
So, sorry, can I add something? When I was writing with a couple of fellow Armenian researchers, a report on national power to then President Sargsyan, I warned in the report that Armenia could be defeated even without being involved in a war if the downward trends in its development continue. We cited Aram First, who after the four-day war said, "Armenian people do not sleep. We are in a state of a permanent war encircled by visible and invisible enemies, and we have no friends." Okay, he might have been exaggerating, it seemed at the time. But I really, and this is my personal opinion only, worry about whether we are in a stage of existence of the Armenian statehood, where the question of whether the state will continue to exist if the current trends, adverse trends continue, whether it will simply disappear, vanish. So our once in a millennia chance to have our own state will be squandered. And I might be exaggerating and I might be divorced from reality, but I just want everyone to think about it and say, well, is this really where we are headed? And if so, what we can do mm-hmm. to reverse this trend?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Definitely worth thinking about. Well, thank you for that. This was an interesting discussion. I think I can speak for Grung in saying that we absolutely support an independent commission. And in whatever way we can help, we're happy to provide you a platform and resources that we can bring to the table. And, I just like to close with a simple quote from Henry Ford, which I found very apt, where he said that the only real mistake is the one from which we learn nothing. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time today. And we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. And goodbye.
That concludes this week's conversation on Grung. We look forward to your feedback, including your suggestions for conversation topics in the future. Contact us on our website at grung.org. That's G-R-O-O-N-G. Or on our Facebook page, ANN-Grung. Or in our Facebook group, Grung-Armenian News Network. Special thanks to Lara Osborne for providing the music for our podcast. I'm Helvik Manucharyan, and on behalf of everyone in this episode, I wish you a good week. Thank you for listening, and talk to you soon.